to tonight's program, The Molloy Show, where no matter how good of a mood you're in as a result of what happened to you today, we can destroy it. Not intentionally. I got a couple of emails from this diatribe I went into last night. I had gotten an email from somebody who thought my attitude was real negative and real nasty, and I shouldn't be doing that. I should be, you know, talking about more uplifting ideas where it concerns the political system. The person who wrote to me especially didn't like my suggestion that we all stay home next election, next presidential election. Let the Republicans, let the Nazis have the election. It'll cut down on the cheating, and then the economy will certainly collapse. The republic will collapse. The country will become balkanized. No longer be the United States of America. It'll be the disparate states of America, if it's that at all. Anyway, the guy wrote to me, didn't like my approach, my attitude about this. And I mentioned that he had written to me, and then I went into this lengthy diatribe attacking me, attacking people who send me those kinds of emails, you know, that, okay, if you want to delude yourself, you want to play, dress up and pretend and think that struggling to reanimate the Democratic Party is the way to go. And I think I use words like cowardly and stupid and asinine and half-wit and jerk and all those nasty ad hominem attack words that I use on this program so often. Well, today I got two emails, one from Bill and one from Dan. Let me read Bill's first. Hi, Mike. If that was my email you were talking about last night, I didn't mean to come across as a Chicken Little. I'm not frightened easily. I've had some people tell me to stop listening to you as soon as I told them I listened to you. They said you were some kind of danger. It just made me listen to you more. I'm also a podcast subscriber because most Fridays I can't listen live. I have volunteer work to do that night. Only Fridays that I'm not well physically do I listen live, but I always listen to your show. In 1979, our family lived directly downwind from Three Mile Island. We evacuated to my grandparents' home until it was safe, quote, to come back. My youngest brother at the time was 2 years old. This decision by Obama to go ahead with the Bush nuclear power plan is stupid beyond the Bush scale. Obama is smarter than that. As Keith Oberman says, good night and good luck. Regards, Bill. No, Bill, it wasn't you that I was referring to. It was Dan. And this is what Dan wrote today. This is in my email this morning. Hi, Mike. I'm a weak-kneed coward. Do you always deal with well-intended criticism by calling your critics names? I made what seemed to me a reasonable observation about the risk that your dystopian police state might be something we might never get rid of because they also control almost all our media. And you can only call me names? Maybe you're the one who needs to grow up. Perhaps I should cut you some slack. You live in a backwards place where the only examples of Democrats are dirtbags like Zell Miller or the nice, if somewhat addled, Gary Batz Pelfrey. As you say, you are just a talk show host. Meanwhile, I'll keep working for real change with people who believe in a better future. I'm lucky enough to know and work with some of the real progressive Democrats who still exist out here in the Northwest. I'm also lucky enough to work with people who believe in stopping corporate takeovers of our environment now, not after they put Blackwater in charge of everything. People like the Backbone Campaign, who helped stop Glacier Northwest from strip mining a neighboring island down to the water. We did that partly with direct action tactics, not just talk. I'm not some peace and love liberal. My early activism came as a very left anti-war activist in the early 70s, who helped start a free clinic, helped Native Americans get their fishing rights by protecting them with guns, gave rides to the local Black Panthers, things like that. I'm an unrecovered radical progressive who thinks that liberals compromise too much. I'm impatient, but practical. I think that if we go into the full, on police state, we may never come back, and I'm not willing to go there. Promote your police state all you want. I won't know anymore. I give up. Not on change, on you. Thanks for the kick in the testicles on my way out the door. Really appreciate it, Dan. Well, thanks for writing, Dan. Let me see. All right, it's time for a little bit here from Prairie 2, our economics affairs correspondent. Business is good at the temple. Oh, I love it when Prairie 2 gets a little religious, don't you? I mean, it's just so butch. He writes, more is coming out about the involvement of Goldman Sachs and other Wall Street banks in the Greek tragedy currently unfolding. The fear in Europe is that they've been engaging, Goldman Sachs has been engaging in the same sort of bad bond hanky-panky in multiple countries. In order to hide the extent of Greece's indebtedness from European Union regulators, Goldman Sachs went all the way back to biblical times and dusted off the practice of money changing. By issuing bonds denominated in yen and U.S. dollars and then converting back to euros at what they euphemistically referred to as an historical rate, they generated $1 billion in pretend profit for the Greek government and a several $100 million commission for themselves. Goldman Sachs alone has taken home 725 million euros in the last 10 years by managing bond sales for Greece. How much of that is in U.S. dollars depends on the historical value of the euro. The U.S. corporate media often starts all of its brief coverage on this scandal with the disclaimer that the U.S. banks didn't cause the crisis, but helped cover it up, causing investors to lose 15 billion U.S. dollars so that you can make $1 billion for yourself isn't a major crime, like stealing a loaf of so me, a cheap bread that was popular for people to live on during frugal times in Greece. The Greek people disagree, however. There has been one bank bombed so far. The reason Greece might default on its debt is that much of this debt was from a practice that was pushed heavily in the United States during the reign of the Bush crime family. They sold public infrastructure to private companies at bargain prices, sales handled by Wall Street, and lost the subsequent revenue, putting them increasingly into debt. And the public was burdened with heavy tolls and fees as they waited for the flat earth prosperity they were promised. In the old days, a money changer that cheated the public had his portable table smashed. A certain long-haired, sandal-wearing liberal reformer has been immortalized in a widely circulated book for doing just that. The word bankrupt literally means to break the board. Today, the board or bank is above the law, and bankrupt is what happens to the rest of us. Cheap bread is the future, but don't get caught stealing any just because you're starving. Prairie 2. His website is prairie2.com. Good point. Good information, because I do not follow the financial press the way I should. I do know that Greece is on the verge of the pigs, you know, they're called, a terrible word, but it's Portugal, Italy, Greece, and who's S? Spain. Yeah, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, right? Is that the four represented by the acronym PIGS? Thanks, Prairie 2. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Doctors find many ways of wrapping brains in metal trays to keep us from the heat. Sky. It's good news, we. Someone's found a way to get the right. I was going to mention this last night and completely forgot about it. As you know, our education affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini, writes occasional essays and submits them here about her experiences as a school teacher in San Francisco. Kay Petrini. And I've gotten several requests from people who would like to have a copy of her essays. Well, she has put together a website where they are all available. It is kaysreportcard.com. K-A-Y-S reportcard.com. Kaysreportcard.com. And there are a bunch of them up there now. Also, she says, if you click on the arrow, let's see, here's what it says. Go to kaysreportcard.com will take you to her website. You can click on each individual entry where you will find a photo and the text of the piece. If you click on the arrow under the photo, you'll get the MP3 audio as well. Let's face it, it's not a real report card without hearing Malloy's interpretation of it. So just like Prairie 2, prairienumeral2.com, our economic affairs correspondent has a website. Now our educational affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini, has a website. So if you want copies of what she has written, write it down, kaysreportcard.com, K-A-Y-S, kaysreportcard.com. I'll try to remember to remind you of that each time she sends one in. kaysreportcard.com. You can read it or you can listen to, boy, that's pretty slick. Hey, Prairie 2, when are you going to put MP3s up? Way to go, Kay. All right, you got that? kaysreportcard.com. For those of you who like what she writes, I certainly do. And then there's this. This comes from Gorilla Monk. Gorilla Monk writes, Mike, I'll make this short. As a loyal podcast subscriber since day one, I have to ask you to please mention this following story during tonight's show. I know animal rights is not a topic you frequently bring up on your show, and I accept the argument that there are bigger issues to tackle, but I really think this story is worth mentioning. It's important not just to the many animal rights activists who listen to the show, but to all freedom-loving Americans who value free speech. Will Potter at greenisthenewred.com, greenisthenewred.com, writes, Senator Val Stevens has sponsored SB 6566, which is, quote, an act prohibiting terrorist acts against animal and natural resource facilities, end quote. This so-called eco-terrorism bill, like many others, ostensibly targets underground groups like the Animal Liberation Front and Earth Liberation Front. However, the bill is so broad that it explicitly targets nonviolent civil disobedience and outlaws speaking out in support of eco-terrorists. People for the American Way's president says the definition of terrorist in the bill is, quote, dangerously broad and, quote, would catch anybody who's ever sent in $10 to save the pandas. It's a thinly disguised effort to squash environmental activism and intimidate citizens who want to speak out, end quote. Treehugger.com also has a great piece on it. Asking companies to stop testing shampoo and perfume on animals shouldn't make me a terrorist. I support the animal rights movement because I want to stop violence against all sentient beings. Gorilla Monk. Well, I am pleased to read your email, Gorilla Monk. Those are your two websites to get more information. Green is the New Red. Greenisthenewred.com and treehugger.com. This is a bill in the state of Washington. And, of course, once it's on the books one place, it'll wind up on the books another place. So check it out. Greenisthenewred.com and treehugger.com. It's a bill in the state of Washington to label anyone who speaks out about abuse of animals and animal experimentation, vivisection, whatever it's called these days. I don't live that far from the Yerkes Primate Center, where notoriously they were discovered videotapes where they would take baboons, strap them into a chair, and slam them at 50, 60 miles an hour into a brick wall to see what kind of brain damage would occur. So, whew, yeah, I know. So check it out, treehugger.com and greenisthenewred.com. It's about a law in the state of Washington that could charge you with a crime if you support people who want to save baby seals. That's where we are, truth seekers.
'Cause if you do, you can hear the voices still calling across the years. And they're all crying across the ocean. And they're crying across the land. And they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free.
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. All right, look, I realize I'm wasting valuable time here, but I've got to read this. This is from Jennifer, who writes from Australia. This is a response to Dan's email, where, I just read this is what Jennifer in Australia writes. Dan, I don't know how old you are, but I'm old enough to have been raised by activist parents, as dedicated to pressing for change as you seem to be. And yes, I was raised well to take up the fight. When I get disheartened, I often turn to my dad for sage words. These are often simple. He's fond of saying point blank, don't ever stop being pissed off. Your stay positive attitude is admirable, but you do Mike a disservice with your attack. Mike Malloy has never once said he offers answers. And yes, he talks. It's a talk show, Dan. He repeatedly admits he has no answers. This doesn't mean he isn't informed. This is an impeccably informed man. Woo! With real chops, who does his research. Oh! His value is that he keeps us pissed off. Perhaps you don't need such motivation, but America is sleeping and it needs a wake-up call. So please don't do what so many progressives do. Don't be divisive, self-righteous, and accusatory. Go, Dan, do your good work and leave others to do theirs. Peace, Jennifer. Ah, well, thanks, Jennifer. All right. Enough. I got an email from Bob at superbeans.com. Mike, I just had an idea for a TV/radio show that will never happen. Here's how it works. Every day the production staff would monitor the radio and television programs hosted by Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh, and write down their lies. The next day, the lies would be shown, the video would be shown in their entirety, and then refuted. How long would the show be? Well, it depends on how many lies you want to see exposed. Without commercials, a typical 60-minute show has 42 minutes of programming. A typical 30-minute program has 22 minutes of content. There wouldn't be any problem, ever, of finding enough material to fill up the time slot. It will never happen, though, for two reasons. First, no one in the mainstream media has the courage to allow the lies of the corporate mouthpieces to be exposed 5 days a week. Second, the production cost would be enormous. How much would you have to pay people to sit and watch all that crap? I once got to the 15-minute mark listening to Limbaugh before I had to turn the radio off. I tried to see if I could watch an entire Glenn Beck program. Couldn't do it. I tried watching O'Reilly and Hannity's programs. Couldn't do those either. It was like being tied to a chair with someone squirting ketchup and mustard in my eyes while listening to barnyard animals being slaughtered. Though I couldn't have anything to do with producing the show, I'd certainly tune in every day to watch. The title, The Lies They Told You Yesterday. Tied to a chair with ketchup and mustard squirted into your eyes? Okay. Yeah, that'd be a great show. It really would. The Daily Show comes, within 5 or 6 miles of that by showing the video clips that they show occasionally, that Jon Stewart shows occasionally of these clowns, but nothing like what Bob is suggesting. That would be a great show. I would watch that. And you know who would be great to host that program? Rachel Maddow. Rachel would just absolutely be great. No, I couldn't do it, Kathy, because I would, unless it was on HBO, because I would just collapse into strings of profanity. Regarding Helen Caldicott that we mentioned last night, Joe in Cleveland writes, Helen Caldicott called the first Gulf War the first nuclear war since World War II because of the use of depleted uranium weaponry. Then Bosnia, and now the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The building of more nuclear power plants anywhere in the world ensures continued production of this stuff and its use in future wars, setting aside the many other objections to the building of these monstrous things. Obama undoubtedly understands the insanity of building more of them, smart as he is, but he doesn't care. The dangers are clear and well documented, although in many cases suppressed. For instance, the CBC, in a special live concert of Canadian-Ukrainian artists dedicated to telling the world the story of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, revealed that there were 300,000 deaths in Greater Russia as a result of the accident. This was aired in 2006 on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, a two-hour program complete with diary readings, a special requiem written by a Ukrainian composer for the Ukrainian dead of Chernobyl, and a recitation of facts surrounding the dangers of nuclear power plants. And this was on CBC Radio 1, the classical music station, not aired on Sirius. Yet proponents of nuke power recite the lie of only 6 deaths in the entire history of the industry. And then this about Obama. Joe also writes, John Pilger, writing in the International Socialist Review, assesses President Obama in this way, quote, Obama's real theme was power, not change. In his book, Dreams of My Father, he refers to a job he took after graduating from Columbia in 1983. He describes his employer as a, quote, consulting house to corporations, end quote. For some reason, he does not say who his employer was or what he did there. The employer was Business International Corporation, which has a long history of providing cover for the CIA with covert action and infiltrating unions and the left. I know this because it was especially active in my own country, Australia. End quote, John Pilger. Best to you, Joe from Cleveland. I didn't know that about President Obama. And I didn't know that the death toll from Chernobyl was 300,000. Obama, you know, has been losing me incrementally. I bought the story, I bought the myth, I bought the change, I bought the hope, I bought, you know, remember Clinton's, campaign was based on the man from Hope. Remember that? Hope, Arkansas? Incrementally, and reluctantly, because I got caught up in it, but I've been, as so many people, I mean, not just me, so many people who listen to this program, because I get the emails all the time, have been withdrawing from this president. Not like these psychopathic right-wingers, these crazy bastards. No, I'm not talking about that, you know. Well, he was born in Kenya. Yeah! Screw you people. Go away. Go play in the dirt. Go play in the traffic. Just, ooh, God. Whew. I digress. But in the real world, not the teabagger militia, patriot, so-called world, but in the real world, those of us who think for ourselves, but who still are looking for that one true leader, huh? Maybe it'll be a hobbit, but we're still looking for that one true leader who can lead the country, this Democratic Republic, out of the jungle that we're in. On the edge of the precipice, the abyss. You know, pick whatever horror analogy you want to use. And apparently it is not going to ever be a Democrat, because the Democratic Party is now corrupt to its very soul, what's left of its soul. The Republican Party, a bunch of goddamn Nazis who are just running around going, oh, yeah, well, you know, he's from Kenya. Stupid bastards. So looking for that one true leader is probably a big mistake. And we were brought up, though, weren't we, in this country? We were brought up to believe that that one true leader was available every 4 years or eight, or in Roosevelt's case, every 16. But we, you know, that was the mythology. We were brought up in a lot of myths in this country. But that one was incredibly enduring, wasn't it? Even after we found out about slavery and genocide and denial of women the right to vote until 1920. even when we realized that young black boys were being butchered like so much pig meat in the South because they happened to look at a white woman, that occurred when I was in high school. I mean, you know, we're not very far removed from that stuff. But even after all that, we still believe that the anointed one, the leader, would emerge from the society and just take us away from that. A lot of us thought it was Kennedy way back in 59, 60. Some people thought it was Eisenhower. Some people thought it was, well, who after that? Well, a lot of people thought it was Reagan, you know, for all the wrong reasons. But it hasn't happened yet, and obviously, it's just, well, I say obviously, if history is any indicator, it's not going to happen. So, what to do? Regarding the PIGS countries, the PIGS, a little debate here. The I stands for both Ireland and Italy, P, Portugal, G, Greece, and S, Spain. And a letter or email here from Prairie 2, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. These countries went with the Chicago school flat earth economy and lost their manufacturing base. Italy has its own problems, but since they invented fascism, they weren't suckered in that far by the banks. Ireland thought they had a high-tech industrial base, but that only lasted until factories could be built in Eastern Europe. Now Ireland has a real estate bubble collapse, and everybody is leaving for Poland to work for 25% less pay rather than live on potatoes. God, don't you hate these international banking organizations? These son of a bitches just really, I mean, they're destroying everything, and people aspire to get into that business.
Oh, I got to get my MBA, and then I'm going to go to Wall Street. I'm going to make a killing. I'm going to get one of those $800,000 bonuses. Yippee!
Jesus Christ, do we have our priorities screwed, don't we? I mean, isn't everything just completely ass backwards? Just completely. We pay school teachers $35,000 a year, and we pay these predatory sons of bitches, or they just take it, $35 million a year. How's that, huh? How does that work out? What sense is that? These masters of the universe. Well, eventually the tumbrils will start turning, and you'll hear the creaking of the wheels as they move through the street into the town square. And you will hear that creaking sound as the blade is raised about 45 or 50 feet up in the air, however high it goes up, and then stunk. Over and over and over again. Navy Admiral Michael Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, he was in Amman, Jordan, visiting with our favorite rendition spot, emperor. That would be the king of Jordan. And he was doing a Q&A session with some of the press. I'm sorry, with troops. He did a 25-minute Q&A session with troops serving in Jordan. Yeah, you didn't know we had military? Yeah, we have military in what, 150 countries? Anyway, when he raised a topic of his own, he said, "No one's asked me about don't ask, don't tell." Now, he said that to soldiers, a Navy, whatever, soldiers, I guess. As it turned out, none of the two dozen or so men or women who met with Admiral Mullen at Marine House in the Jordanian capital yesterday had any questions on the 17-year-old policy that bars gays and lesbians from serving openly in the military. And they didn't have any questions about Mullen's public advocacy of its repeal. Remember when he sat in front of Congress and he said, this is insane. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant Daryl Robinson, who's the Operations Coordinator for Defense Attaché's Office at the U.S. Embassy here, explained why no one asked anything after the session. This is what Chief Master Sergeant Robinson said, quote, "The U.S. military was always at the forefront of social change. We didn't wait for laws to change. We did." Some Republicans in Congress have expressed outrage at repealing the ban in wartime. These cowardly goddamn Republicans who wouldn't take up a weapon if somebody held a knife to their baby's throat.
Oh, well, can we pray?
They're the ones. Outrage? At a Senate hearing earlier this month, McCain, remember McCain, urged Mullen, McCain sitting up in his chair, and there was Mullen and Defense Secretary Robert Gates, and testifying, McCain urged them to, quote, "keep the impact it will have on our forces firmly in mind." And yet those gathered at Marine House made it clear they've already accepted the idea of gays and lesbians serving among them. And you know why, don't you? Because they know goddamn good and well it's been going on forever. It's a political issue raised by these right-wing, patriot, teabagging, flop-eared freaks who want the government to keep their hands off their Medicare and their Social Security. You know they want to pass a law to let gays serve in the military. These dumb bastards don't even understand the gays and lesbians have been defending, if that's still an operative term. I'm just getting all rhetorical on you now. Defending their right to hold their little teabag parties since forever. What an issue. What a phony ass issue. And what an issue for these right wing nutballs to just really, really salivate over, right? They're going to pass a law that's going to put gays in the military. And you know what will happen then? They'll be showering with your son and looking at his penis. That's what. Or worse. You don't want that to happen to your boy, do you? Then vote for me. I'm a Republican. I'll never let that happen. I'm a crazy son of a bitch. I'm a Republican. Did I serve in the military? Hell no. I want your son to serve there, but I don't want him to have his penis looked at by a queer. You sorry bastards. Quick update here regarding Ireland. I mentioned Imperi 2 wrote in that the international corporations, especially those based in the United States, are abandoning Ireland now. And George in Oregon writes in, Mike, Dell Computer is one of those leaving Ireland for Poland to save 75% in wages. They're abandoning their facility in Limerick, where they were given free land and exemption from taxes, to go to Poland, where they're getting free land and exemption from taxes. Notice the similarities. Ain't unregulated capitalism great? I wonder who they and a lot of other corporations will try to screw next. George in Oregon. Dell Computers. Dell, of course, is a huge right winger, a huge Bush supporter. Probably money behind the teabag movement. Man. But back to Admiral Michael Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who is in Amman, Jordan, visiting some of our troops there. 25-minute question and answer session with the troops. And nobody raised it, so he raised it. No one's asked me about don't ask, don't tell. And as it turned out, nobody wanted to talk about that. The people who were gathered at Marine House where this Q&A session with the troops was held, made it clear they've already accepted the idea of gays and lesbians serving among them. The only people who haven't accepted that are these right-wing sons of bitches and Republicans, these teabagger freaks. But according to Stars and Stripes, a far more interest to military people gathered there were other areas, they told Admiral Mullen, such as allowing women to serve in infantry units. And they also asked about relations between the military and the State Department. And focusing down a little bit more narrowly, they wanted to know when a key Defense Department official would be assigned to Amman, Jordan, permanently. Those are the kinds of questions. See, Republicans wouldn't know this because those sons of bitches never, never serve their country, with one or two exceptions. You know, John McCain, the great hero of Vietnam, who used to murder people from 10,000 feet up in the air. I don't know what Chuck Grassley did. Was Grassley? Grassley was in the military, wasn't he? Huh? But 99.9% of Republicans, like our newly departed leaders, Bush and Cheney, are goddamn cowards of the highest order. They wouldn't have served, like I said, if somebody held a knife to their mother's throat. They would have said, you got a knife to her throat? We'll do it quick. Cowardly sons of bitches. But they will don their camo and run around in the woods and go, yeah, we're the patriots. Yeah. See, this here's the Constitution. Hey, yeah. And keep your government hands off my Social Security, you bastards. You know we have a Negro in the White House? Yeah. We're patriots. We don't like this deficit. I don't like cap and trade. Global warming, that's Al Gore's fantasy. That ain't real. You dumb bastards. Since Mullen appeared on Capitol Hill this month and told a stunned Congress that in his personal view, gays and lesbians should be allowed to serve openly, the response among members of the military has been little more than, this is according to Stars and Stripes, a shrug! Okay. Yeah. Hey, you hear the chief. Yeah, the chief said they ought to be able to serve openly. Really? Yawn. Let's go out and kill some Arabs. Yawn. Oh, by the way, hey, soldier, you going on this patrol with me? Yep. Are you queer? Oh, my God. Anyway, the session yesterday, Mullen told McClatchy newspapers that although he's held three town hall sessions with troops since he had that testimony, get this, not a single member of the U.S. military has asked him about the issue. They don't care. They don't care. They're in the military. They don't care. Just make sure that if I go into combat, that the person to my left or my right knows how to use his weapon or her weapon and will use it. That's all I care about. Cover my ass. I will cover yours. I don't care who you sleep with. But at yesterday's session, not only were there Marines there, but members of the Army and the Air Force, both male and female service members, according to Stars and Stripes, explained why they were surprised by the whole issue. You know why? Because they'd already been serving with gays and lesbians. There's been so little reaction among the members of the military who are out there in uniform doing what corporate America is telling them they have to do. It's been so little reaction that it raises questions about how much study, you know, they put this off for a year, right? They're going to study it. How much study the issue needs and whether the Pentagon study is meant to pacify its concerns, the Pentagon's concerns, if they have any, or Congress's concerns. That means these Republican teabag cowards, bastards. You know, some queer might see your son's penis. You know, some dyke might see your daughter's vagina. Woo! You want that to happen? You want them looking? That's what they focus on. What happens in the shower? Republicans really honestly believe, these cowardly bastards really believe that every day after going out and killing Arabs and Al-Qaedas and Talibaners and so on and so forth, that everybody goes home and takes a shower. And then what, you ignorant sons of bitches? They sit around and have tea and crumpets? Kill anybody today? No, did you? No, but I think I wounded a couple, did you? Hey, what's on the TV? They shower together. You want some queer looking at your son's wee-wee? You want that, ma'am? Good God.
But I thought Dr. James Dobson said if you didn't want your son to be queer, you were supposed to take him in the shower and show him your penis.
Right.
So he wouldn't be gay.
Right.
Oh, I'm confused.
I'm confused, too. I don't know what these people, you know, I mean, queers. We're going to worry about them. We're queers. You know what's queer about this issue is how much attention Republicans focus on the sexuality of other people. You ignorant savages, you really are. You're a different species. You're not Homo sapiens. You're different. And I'd like to be able to feel some compassion for you, but you'd gag me. Marine Corps Commandant General James Conway, I'm a goddamn Marine, I'm the Commandant, has said he objects to the change in policy. Keep them queers covered up. We don't want, hey, we're Marines. We don't want no queer looking at our penises. I'll tell you that right now. Keep it the way it is. And General George Casey, the Army Chief of Staff, has said he believes the military should not change the policy in the middle of fighting two wars. Yeah, wait until these endless wars are ended. When will that be, General Casey? 2080?
Without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Yeah, I'm just about finished with this topic, but it just absolutely freaks me out. You know, people who are in the military, who actually serve, not the ones that sit behind a desk, not the ones who work in the Pentagon, not the ones who, drive around in big cars with the flags on them with a certain number of stars. No, I'm just talking about, you know, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, specialists, E2s and 3s and 4s and 5s. As far as gays in the military, it's like saying, well, I don't think there should be any gays in Atlanta. You know, it's crazy. So while Marine Corps Commandant General James Conway has said he objects to it, and General George Casey, the Army Chief of Staff, said he believes the military should not change the policy, don't ask, don't tell, in the middle of fighting two wars, there was none of that division exists among the service members. back to that meeting where the chairman of the Joint Chiefs was having a Q&A session, Mike Mullen, Army Sergeant, Staff Sergeant Pepper Alexander, 33, 14-year veteran, now serves at the U.S. Embassy in Amman, Jordan, told Admiral Mullen that she has served with gays and lesbians. She says that she knows that more than 13,000 troops have left the military since Congress enacted the policy. And she said, quote, "We have lost good soldiers because of that, because they just wanted to be who they are. It's sad," end quote. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, sent this in. And, hell, she needs a website. I guess the thing that irritates me the most about the policy, military policy on gays and lesbians is because it so closely parallels the policy up until Truman ordered it stopped against people of color in the military. And how you expect people to in their minds, they're serving their country. I don't think anybody, well, I better not say nobody joins the military to learn how to be a welder, because I guess a lot of people do. But I think anyone who joins the military understands the risk they're taking. Let's put it that way. Maybe a lot of people join the military for the housing, the medical care, the earn credit towards college. But they also understand that at any given moment they can be told to saddle up and move out, because we're going to go kill people, and you may get killed. And say your prayers or whatever, because off we go. Anybody that joins the military understands that. I mean, come on. Even if you join the National Guard here in the last 30 years, because, you know, getting into a reserve unit, National Guard unit, that doesn't mean squat. You could still be sent to Helmand Province tomorrow. But asking people to abide by rules in the military when they are putting their lives on the line for bad reasons, 90% of the time, yes. Because 90% of the time, if not 100% of the time now, corporate America dictates where we are going to send our troops. But still, when you wade through all of that, it still gets down to the young man or the young woman who says, "All right, I'll give it a shot. I'll put on the uniform. I'll go through the training. I'll go overseas. I will tell myself I am fighting for justice and freedom and dignity for oppressed people. I will tell myself that because I must tell myself that in order to pick up a gun and shoot somebody dead. I must tell myself that they deserve to die and they will burn in our Savior's hell because they were oppressing women and children and old men. I will kill that person." You know how it goes. So they go do that. And then they come back and you have these pig sons of bitches in the United States talking about, "No, we can't let them get married. That'll destroy marriage. That'll piss off our Lord and Savior. No, you can go kill and die, but you can't get married." Same thing, basically, that they told black folk. "You can go kill the Germans and the Japs and the whoever's, but when you come back, boy, get your ass in the back of the bus. I don't care. You got how many Purple Hearts? You got Silver Stars? You got what? Shut up. Get in the back of the bus, boy."
the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
Okay, 26 before the hour. Almost finished with this one. I said that earlier, didn't I? Well, just a couple emails here. Chris writes in, hi, Mike. Since Christians are constantly finding a new persecution, I say let the military keep the policy. Hold on a minute. I got to turn this damn heater off. It's cold here in the mountains. I say let the military keep the policy of don't ask, don't tell, but with a twist. Only Christian gays must remain in the closet. That is, keep don't ask, don't tell for Christian gays only. I think progressives or liberals should learn how to play the straw man argument too, Chris. Christian gays. But a Christian gay would never join the military. He's too busy trying to be deprogrammed. Help me. Help me. My pastor says it's just a matter of, I don't know, being fixed. Help me, please. I want to have sex with a woman. Well, actually, I don't. Help me. And Rick in San Francisco writes, two thoughts on gays in the military during the good war. Remember World War II. Rick writes, my dad went into the Army in 1942, transferring later into the Army Air Forces, where he became a navigator on bombers. I asked him about homos in uniform during World War II. Key Christ, he said. I never knew there were so many fruits running around. Mike, they may as well forget closing the gate. That pony's long gone. And William Manchester, in the book Goodbye to All That, suggested that the Marines are the gayest branch of the service. Why? Because they sell themselves as the most macho. A closeted gay man, back then, could put hometown gossip to rest by becoming a Marine. Rick in San Francisco. Oh, San Francisco, huh, Rick? Huh? Huh? Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. I never knew there were so many fruits running around. Thank God they're all on our side. All right. One last thing. Then we're gonna take some calls here. The number is 877-996-2556. Let's wait a second, because there's a couple more things here. First of all, John MacArthur, writing in the Providence Journal, has just a wonderful idea. The headline is "Rattle Obama with a Primary Challenger." This is great. This is great. This is something that Lyndon Johnson, were he alive, could certainly speak volumes about. Remember when Gene McCarthy went after Lyndon, and then Bobby Kennedy jumped in, and Lyndon Johnson said, I will not serve another term as your president. John MacArthur says, if you're disillusioned with Obama, you watch The Who play Won't Get Fooled again during the Super Bowl, you're mad and you'd like to do something about it, well, don't sit there being a whiny liberal, the kind of softy that Rahm Emanuel likes to insult. Don't retreat into cynicism. Or don't say things like, all politicians are alike, or the big money runs everything. Both of which are true, John. No, do something constructive, something that Rahm Obama will clearly understand. Give Obama a primary. That's what they do in Chicago, in Cook County. In Chicago, when you betray the boss, or you betray the people, suddenly your safe seat on the Chicago City Council, in the Illinois Legislature, or the U.S. House or Senate isn't so safe anymore. Because seemingly out of nowhere comes a well-financed, reasonably articulate opponent from your own party with lots of ammunition to attack your lousy record. So, if you feel betrayed by Obama's expansion of the war in Afghanistan and the use of mercenary forces in Iraq, if you're pissed off because you see him kowtow to Wall Street and Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein, or his plan to donate 30 million taxpayer-subsidized policies to the health insurance business. And you wonder why Guantanamo and NAFTA are still open for business. That it's not too early to start thinking about 2012 and who might run against the incumbent now stationed in the White House. Yeehaw! It's a great article at the Providence Journal. John MacArthur, I think it's also picked up by commondreams.org, so you can check it out either place. It's a lengthy article. You should read it. It's good stuff. It's not that long. It really isn't. But what a great idea, right? Somebody challenge Obama from the left. Who wants to? How about Michael Moore? How about Michael Moore? Michael Moore would be a good challenge from the left, wouldn't he? Huh? How about Kucinich? I hope that happens. I really do. That could make me decide to vote again. Because I will not vote for this president again. I don't care if Sarah Palin's running against him. Seriously, not moi. I'm tired of being hit over the head with my own stupidity. So where it concerns the political process and who's who and what's what. So not going to do it again. But I would vote for a challenger from the left. Partially just for the sheer hell of it, and partially to see a real Democrat, become the president of the United States. That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it? When's the last time we had a real Democrat who was president of the United States? Who was it? Harry Truman? Lyndon Johnson almost made it, except he would, and he probably did make it, seriously. But he was, I don't know, it just depends on whose history you want to believe. Was he conned into believing that we had been attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin and had to respond? Have to respond, you know. Or was he in on the scam? I'll never forget that night when it was 1965. And about a month later, I went to take my pre-induction physical because of this. But I'll never forget Johnson sitting there saying, "My fellow Americans, our forces in Southeast Asia, tonight, in the Gulf of Tonkin off the coast of Vietnam, we're attacked. Our naval PT boats or battleships or whatever the hell they were fired upon by North Korean gunboats." So, a challenge from the left. That would be an excellent idea. Michael Moore, Michael Moore would be a good, I know, he's no more qualified than I am, but who knows? Who else? Can you think of somebody on the left that would, How about anybody in the Senate or the House other than Dennis Kucinich? What? Joe Biden? Hillary. Kathy's been around the Tiger Bomb too much today. Hillary? Hillary is to the right of Obama. Hillary is a Republican from the word go. Are you kidding me? Jesus, not Hillary. I wouldn't vote for Hillary for anything. Never have, never will. And, you know, I had so many female listeners back during the campaign say, "I'll never listen to your sexist pig ass again, Malloy. I've been supporting you since you were at WSB in Atlanta. To hell with you now." God, did I get a lot of that. Ooh! Sorry. But somebody from the left, I wonder if General Wesley Clark, if his policies, of course, you know, he might, I don't know. Clark, you know, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, you know who I'm talking about. He was involved in Clinton's war in Middle Europe. He was the CNC of that war. There's always Al Gore. No, Al Gore has become sort of a corporatist, too, I think. Yeah, he's leading the charge on global climate change, but, you know, Al Gore is, he would no more do it than pee up a rope. He had his chance, and he knows that there are no second acts in that kind of politics, unless you're Dick Nixon, and he's dead. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Into the distance, ribbon of black, stretched to the point of no turning back. Flight of fancy on a windswept field, standing alone. Sense is real. Fatal attraction is holding me fast. How can I escape this irresistible grasp? Can't keep my eyes from the circling sky. Tongue tied and twisted.
It's about 9 before the hour. Alan Grayson. Bernie Sanders, Howard Dean. Well, there you go. Yeah, I don't know why I seldom bring up Bernie Sanders. I guess because he gets very good coverage on Hartman's program. Another service that Hartman performs instead of sitting around bitching like I do. Bernie Sanders would be a good one. Yeah. Yeah, he would. Howard Dean would be a good one. A good challenge. We're talking about challenge from the left against Obama. I don't know who this is from, but it says, I know you can't stand him, but how about Al Franken? No. No, Al Franken is probably very effective as a senator from Minnesota, but no. Bernie Sanders. Okay, well, it looks like Sanders would be the guy. And regarding the last real president, this is from Steve the Banker. Mike, it was August 4th through the 11th in 1964. Anyhow, the last real president was Kennedy. The last real speech was the American University speech in 1963. Read it tonight. Some of those younger than you and me would learn what a great president could do. Who can run in 2012 from the left? Feingold. But like me, he's Jewish. Clark? Almost, but not really. Possibly the Cuomo kid in New York in 2012. This will take more thinking. Steve, the very tired banker. Feingold, yeah. There were a couple of things that Russ Feingold has said or that I've caught in news reports that set off little alarm bells in my democratic socialist head. Warning. But there's so much about Feingold that is very, very appealing, very attractive. It would certainly bring out the anti-Semites, wouldn't it? Oh, Jesus, they had fun with Barack Obama. This guy would be a Feingold? Well, you know, he's really a citizen of Israel. Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? Huh? And all you Orthodox Jews who look at me as not Orthodox Jews. Orthodox Jews are still waiting for the Messiah to establish the state of Israel. So it wouldn't be the order. But all these modern Jews that listen to this program in this country and get their panties in a bunch because I'm always criticizing Israel's foreign policy, then you would find out, wouldn't you? Run Feingold? Hell, they would probably attack Feingold, too. Well, he's not Jewish enough. Yeah, Russ Feingold. Now, we're just messing around here, so nobody has to send me anything about any of these people that would show me that they are really closet fascists. You know, Bernie Sanders is not really a democratic socialist. He's a Nazi. And, you know, you produce the proof, right? No, don't. Just don't send it to me. Barack Obama's a Nazi. Or is he a communist? Well, he's one or the other. Well, no, they're both the same to a teabag head. They really do believe that a national socialist in Germany in the 20s and 30s, because the word socialist in there, is a left-winger. You teabaggers are the dumbest collection of mud people ever to walk the earth. Why don't you just stand in the rain and dissolve? Please, go away. I can't stand it. Alan Grayson? No, I wouldn't go with Alan Grayson. I really wouldn't. Oprah Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey. Oh my God. Gordon in Oklahoma City says, if we're making nominations, I'd like to place Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin's name for consideration. See, I don't know anything about Tammy Baldwin. I don't even know what state she's from. I'm sorry. What does this person say? Well, Bernie Sanders again. Okay, so let's end the straw poll. We're about to go into a break. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone so y'all can just call in with your wisdom and your pearls of entertainment, and we'll try to launch this program. We're 2 hours into it, and we're just sitting here spinning our wheels, so let's see if y'all can just bring some piss and vinegar and get us off neutral. That we've been sitting on here for 2 hours, right? Isn't this a boring show tonight? Good God. Sharon Stone? Sharon Stone? I think Sharon Stone should run. I like her positions. Well, I do too, but, you know. That was from Bill from Ottawa. Oh, and then he's got some quotes from her here. My goodness, she said these things? Huh. On the earthquake last year in China, Sharon Stone said, quote, all these earthquakes and stuff happened, and I thought, is that karma? When you're not nice, bad things happen to you. There's some more here. All right, we'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour. Tammy Baldwin is a member of Congress from Madison, Wisconsin. Will writes, check her out. We've been happy with her. Sorry to be that ignorant. Anything else before we take your calls? What is this? All right, let me get this in. This is from Captain Mary in Memphis, who writes, McCain has been another nutball act from John McCain. He has recently introduced the so-called Dietary Supplement Safety Act, the DSSA. It's supported by the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, funded by major sports teams and the Orwellian-named organization, quote, Supplement Safety Now. Supplement Safety Now. End quote. In his push for the bill, McCain referred to NFL players who, poor souls, had been exposed to illegal steroids via dietary supplements. So McCain introduces the DSSA to allegedly protect sports players from steroids. How? By cracking down on dietary supplements. These supplements are natural substances that can't be patented and then sold for big bucks. So the pharmaceutical industry doesn't want them on the market. Neither does the FDA, which gets about two-thirds of its budget funding from the pharmaceutical and biotech industries. The FDA and the sports industry already have the authority to stop illegal steroid use, so the bill actually does nothing about steroids. What it does is say that dietary supplements must be treated like drugs and go through an approval process that can cost up to $1 billion. Big pharma can easily pay that amount, but small supplement companies that Americans and increasingly Europeans rely on can't. If passed, the DSSA will drive American companies out of business. It will also force us into partial compliance with Codex Alimentarius, putting us in the same dangerous situation as Europe. I don't know what that is, Captain Mary. Europe has already partially complied with Codex. As a result, the European Food Safety Authority has severely shortened its list of allowable supplements and has lowered the potency of others to ridiculously ineffective levels. So, if DSSA is passed, it'll be a direct threat on our health freedom. Our ability to stay alive by choosing healthful foods and dietary supplements as protection against Monsanto's filthy GMO-laden Frankenfoods, Cat Marion, Memphis. Okay, I get it, except for Codex. I don't know what that is. Codex Alimentarius. No, it's not Codex. It's Codex, C-O-D-E-X. Oh, well, Mary will let me know. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to check in tonight. Robert is in Shorewood, Illinois.
Hi, how you doing, sir? I was actually going to talk about the Federal Reserve, but I just want to tell you, I've heard Codex Alimentarius, you said?
Yeah.
I think what that is basically companies getting patents on the actual, like, DNA or the molecular, the DNA structure of elements, like vitamin E and vitamin C and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then basically what they can do is they can take those elements, which essentially are like the antioxidants and the specific things in there that make it so potent.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, they can then patent that and then pull it out of there. I've read something on that on naturalnews.com and a couple other websites.
Well,
I read something on MSN too.
That really sucks.
That's absolutely outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, just like you said about Monsanto Foods, where you have, I mean, before when they used to genetically modify things, it was actually, you know, splicing the strongest of regional foods, whether it be like the corn. Like, didn't they splice like basically a corn from Central America and from Europe that is basically weather resistant from Europe and bug resistant from Central America? And that's pretty much the corn we have, right?
It is.
Tomatoes,
yeah.
Too. Mm-hmm. Tomatoes, the mixture that they did from, I think it was Spain and Italy. I mean, that's sensible, but like the Monsanto has something called the Terminator gene. Have
right.
you ever heard of that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've talked about that on the program.
I mean, that's absolutely outrageous.
Sure.
To
sure.
sit there and have something where you can't, you know, recouping your benefits from the crops.
And you know what's really scary now that you brought it up? A lot of things are kind of scary to me. Scary in a ghost or a haint or a spook kind of way. I don't mean scary where I feel my life is threatened.
No, I mean, like, why would someone want to control that?
Well, because
scary,
of money.
Like it,
but,
it,
you know, what I was going to say, what is scary to me is when I walk into a grocery store, and I still have to do some shopping in a grocery store, it's not all farmers markets, and I go by the tomato stand, and there are 6,000 tomatoes sitting there, and they all look exactly the same.
That's, and they don't taste like
no, they don't taste. They don't taste like tomatoes. But that's scary to see it because you see.
In my old neighborhood in Melrose Park, I mean, it was kind of industrialized. But the lady that lived behind me worked for the church,
mm-hmm.
and she used to make all her fresh fruit. She had a greenhouse and everything. And I used to go back there and garden with her. God, till I was about 13, 14, till I discovered girls, essentially. And you know, it was great that I've never smelled. Just the potency of, I mean, just how rich the taste, the colors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, just there's nothing compared to
right.
organically grown or naturally grown food. I mean, it's just, it's a whole different level. I mean,
hamburger
or having a fine steak.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I grew up with that. I grew up with that kind of grandparents. My parents had a little tiny garden that maybe not, depending on whether or not they were motivated to do it every spring. But my grandparents had a garden that was about an eighth of an acre in size. And they grew everything.
Probably most of their yard, too, wasn't it?
Well, no, they had about 2 acres, but they had about an eighth of an acre, but they grew everything in there, and I grew up tasting that kind of food and going out and picking it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and eating it at 6:30 when my grandfather would come home from work. I mean, that's that's just how they lived. You know, they were immigrants. They didn't know any better, you know, so.
Well,
they,
not even knowing it, I think they did know better. Not to disagree with you, but I think they did know better, you know.
I was making a joke.
I know, I'm sorry.
Right.
But I mean, they did. They really, I mean, they knew that. You know, we sit here and we get together and I've worked in the food service industry pretty much my whole life since I was about 17. I'm 30 now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I see people that, you know, they're always in such a hurry, always so rushed and so, you know, frantic. And when they actually come in, they sit down, relax, they have time to talk with you. I mean, you just see how much of a burden it is
mm-hmm.
for someone to unload and just know that someone else understands it. They feel and understand. You know, exactly what your pains are. It's just, but originally the reason I called was the Federal Reserve about how we have the fractional reserve system.
Wait. This drives listeners away and puts me to sleep when we all are in agreement. We all are in agreement that the Federal Reserve, should be ended tomorrow. But,
but I think the specifics, I mean,
don't do specifics. Honest to God, Robert, because,
okay, I'm sorry.
You know, I'm losing listeners tonight because I've been so boring. Don't put the icing on the boring cake. Everything you've said so far has been great and I appreciate you calling, but I hate talking about Federal Reserve. You know, it's a snorer. You know what I'm saying?
I won't talk about that. Sorry.
I admit the sons of bitches are eating us alive. It shouldn't be a snorer. It should be something that makes people grab for the pitchforks
I think because they intentionally interject large words and they use all these. I mean, they use these long drawn out legal explanations of what they do.
That's probably
essentially what they do is they take your money and loan it back to you at interest.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, let's be honest. That's what it is.
And when they're finished doing that and there's no more to take from me, they just print more. Hey, I got to leave it there. Robert, thank you. Thank you. I wish we could talk about the Federal Reserve and fractionals, but I can't. It'll just make me want to stab myself. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Every day you knew, they can feed you cat and you'll never know what they wrap it up in dough, boy. They fry it real crisp in dough. Shaolin asked if I wanted more as he was dialing up his buddy at the old pet store. I said, not today, I love in my belly and
he's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Ron is in San Antonio, Texas, listening online. Hey, Ron.
Oh, no, I'm not listening online, Mike. I listen to your podcast, and I listen to Monday night's podcast tonight while I was preparing supper.
Ah, well, what did you? What was supper Monday night?
Oh, burritos and Spanish rice, so it's kind of
Do you know, I would rather eat ground-up glass than Spanish rice, and I'll tell you why. We used to have Spanish rice all the time when I was a kid because it was cheap, and we were dirt poor, and to this day, if I'm around a can of stewed tomatoes, or of tomato bits and pieces, a can of that stuff that's opened up, my gag reflex immediately goes off. And contadina tomato sauce. If I get near that stuff, I just lose it. I have to stick with fresh tomatoes.
I started off with bacon fat, so I a little bit different.
bacon fat.
Yeah, but I wanted to correct something that you said to your last caller.
Oh yeah, go ahead,
Mike. You are never boring.
Oh okay.
And I found that. But I share your frustration with the Democrats and the Republicans. Oh, forget it. But
yeah, really.
Yeah, I subscribe to some of the other podcasts too. I've emailed you some about that. And the last time I was on the air with you, I hung up rather abruptly because I was saying something else. But
fixing some Spanish rice, probably, right?
No, but no. I was. I hope I didn't.
You didn't. Don't worry about it.
Insult you or anything.
No, of course not.
Yeah, I email you frequently. I just wanted to give you encouragement because you said something about looking for another job, and we need you, Mike.
All right. No, I'll never find another job, Ron. This is it for me, Ron. Thanks, I appreciate it, man. Take care. Spanish rice. God, I hated that stuff. Lee is listening on Sirius and driving in Oklahoma. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Mike. It's good to talk to you.
My pleasure, sir.
I was listening to that email you was reading about the food supplements.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine, this elderly lady, is taking medical marijuana and was taking a small dosage of oxycodone. The doctors rather... giving her the marijuana prescription again,
mm-hmm.
They upped her dosage of oxycodone because it's controlled by the pharmaceuticals and they can make a profit off of it, and they're trying to get her off of the marijuana.
You mean OxyContin?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the drug that Limbaugh was addicted to that destroyed his hearing. That's why he has to have those ear implants. He remember, he had his house, his housekeeper, go make deals in Florida, I don't know, Palm Beach or wherever, in Denny's parking lots. She would show up and buy street drugs for Rush. And remember, he got busted, but he paid off enough people and he went into rehab. But OxyContin is what made him go completely deaf.
Yeah, I know, and instead of telling her to take more marijuana, which was working for what the problem she was having,
right.
They want to get her off of that and get her addicted to the oxycodone.
Mm-hmm.
Cotton, excuse me.
Right. Well,
it all because they can make money off of it.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, big pharma, whatever you want to call it. And the military industrial complex and the American petroleum industry, nuclear industry, I don't think any of them give a damn. What do you mean you don't think? None of them give a damn about the effect of what they're doing where it concerns people, old folks, kids, babies, teenagers. It doesn't matter to them. Hey, thanks, Lee. Appreciate you checking in. Ben is in San Antonio listening on XM. Hey, Ben.
hey, Mike. Can I keep talking about dietary supplements?
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, I just caught the tail end of what you were talking about before, but it was interesting to me because of the industry I spent the last 10 years working in a specific area, and most of these drugs actually come out of natural substances.
Right.
And the one I wanted to talk about was the statin drugs, which are, I think, the most highly prescribed, if not in the top three.
I think it's at that point now, yeah, Lipitor especially.
Yeah, and these are, you know, for lowering cholesterol.
Right.
And basically where it comes out of is something that you get from our food, or if you live in China, it would be in your food, is Chinese red yeast rice.
Hey, hold on a second, Ben, all right? Let me put you on hold. I got to do a break here, and,
okay,
and
yeah,
we'll
sure.
come back. Just I'll come right back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers.
If he looks spaced out, would you buy his story? Would you believe he had an eye infection?
Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Before the hour, back to Ben in San Antonio. Okay, where were we?
Yeah, we were talking about statin drugs
right.
and the natural precursors.
Yeah, red yeast rice. I used to take that for cholesterol lowering. Its cholesterol lowering properties, and I
right.
I had some smart ass doctor laugh at that and say, "Well, you need a statin drug." Excuse me. So, you know, I went. I went along with it, and you know, I take Lipitor.
Yeah, but he was he's basically prescribing you the same thing, or prescribing you the same thing that
right.
you were already taking. The red yeast rice was there was actually it was an interesting battle during the 1990s. There was a company out of Utah, I believe it was called New Skin. It was offering a product called Colestin. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. I think it was New Skin versus Shalala. And anyway, they basically the FDA made sure that they won that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent the last 10 years working in a biotechnology laboratory where that was a product we took, and then we the red yeast rice, and we actually sold it for other indications.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
Bone health and arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. It's a terrific natural drug.
Yeah, I still have in the back of my kitchen cabinet where I keep and Kathy keeps the supplements that we take, and we also have vitamins, natural vitamins that we give Molly.
Mm-hmm.
I still have. I was looking at it the other day, and I thought about just pitching it. But, you know, that stuff lasts forever. Red yeast rice, I mean, you can you can eat it 10 years after you bought it.
You can. And what happened was, basically, you can still buy it. They're just not allowed to advertise it for the indication of cholesterol lowering. Mm-hmm. But chemically, it's the exact same. It's lovastatin. Monacolin K, which is in red yeast rice, is lovastatin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so...
Yeah,
this is protecting a corporation.
Yeah, exactly. For a while, about 5 or 6 years ago, anytime we had a reason to go to a doctor, other than, you know, I mean, I go get a yearly checkup, you're supposed to do that, but anything other than that checkup, we had a young Chinese practitioner. There's a huge Asian section of Atlanta. And we used to drive into his office or whatever, and you take a seat. There might be 5 or 6 people there, and then it was your turn. You would go up where he was sitting at a table, and all he would do was take your pulse. They don't do blood pressure readings. They don't have you stick out your tongue. But the Chinese doctor would sit there and measure. Just no electronic gear, no blood pressure kit. He would just measure your pulse, and by measure, I mean, you know, take several different kinds of readings that Western medicine doesn't pay any attention to. And after doing that, he would ask a few questions, and he would write some things down using Chinese characters, and then he would write out a prescription and in Chinese characters. And then you would take the prescription and thank him. And you would go 25 feet to your right, where there was a huge glass counter, and behind the counter were jars and containers of Chinese herbs and roots and leaves and berries, and you would hand the woman back there the slip of paper with the prescription. She would then go to these various containers and take a scoop and scoop this stuff out and put it in a brown paper bag. You would take the paper bag home, put it in so many ounces of, yes, distilled water. That's what he said, use distilled water, and boil it and make a tea and then drink it for the next 3 or 4 days. And whatever the hell it was that was drove you to the Chinese doctor to begin with would then go away. And I used to open up that bag and look at this stuff before I would put it in the pot of water. It was everything. I mean, amazing stuff, roots and bark and berries and leaves and flowers and all dried and it all smelled just so medicinal and it worked. And I just wondered, I always wondered how many of the things in that bag could also be found at a Walgreens pharmacy, back behind the counter, under some trade name, amped up to the point where it would overwhelm your immune system or interfere with it. You know what I'm talking about? I'm sure you do.
No, I agree with you on this. And it's a shame because, you know, the government, you know, or the FDA supposedly should be looking out for the consumer, you know, giving us access to.
Well, you know, I have no problem with the FDA looking out for my interests where it concerns pharmaceuticals. You're damn right.
I agree with you, but they should be allowing us access to things that work.
Well, that's the thing.
Not taking the time to defend corporations who are basically selling, basically they took a natural product.
Right.
They're selling it back to us so we can eat it anyway, and they're saying, no, you're not allowed to eat it.
Yeah.
Which is what happened with the red yeast rice. Although, you can still buy it.
Yeah, you can. You can.
But you can't buy it. It won't say cholesterol, all right?
Mm-hmm. All right, Ben, thanks, man. I got to move on. Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm a big advocate, as long as we live in a system that is built around and is predatory capitalism, there has to be government agencies, as long as the government is not corrupt. The last several governments we've had have been totally, completely corrupt. The agencies that are supposed to be, you know, whether it's EPA or FDA or, well, you know, whatever it is, FDIC, it doesn't make any difference what the agency is. They've become totally corrupted, and they become corrupted not from misuse or because they're they don't serve a function, but because they are run now not to protect the consumer, but to protect the very industries that they were supposed to be governing. Or monitoring or regulating. And this, of course, reached its highest point of corruption under Bush and Cheney. You know, when you appoint some crazy son of a bitch who used to be a lobbyist for the lead industry, you know, to head, your Department of Agriculture or whatever the hell she headed. I mean, that not only is that the height of what you and I would consider hypocrisy, but it's also just a kick right into the solar plexus of anybody who still believes that government's function, one of its functions is to be a buffer between predatory capitalism and us poor sons of bitches out here who put things in our bodies and our mouths because we've been told it's good for us. How many times do you folks watch these commercials, that are on with the evening news on all three networks? Jesus H. Christ. I mean, in the first place, they must consider that their entire viewing audience is over the age of 75 and on life support. It's incredible what they're advertising. And, you know, what's this one that's really got my attention? What is it, Kathy? The one you stop smoke is a stop smoking drug. It ends in IX. What is that? Chantix. Thank you. Chantix. And they run these commercials, and almost every commercial you hear now, but especially this one, it tells you that this stuff may kill you. It may kill you. I mean, I guess they could say the same thing about aspirin. The people who are allergic to aspirin or who are prone to intestinal bleeding. Okay. So maybe I'm shooting my own argument in the ass here. But I mean, when they advertise product after product after product and tell you, oh, by the way, if you find yourself going insane, if your pots and pans start talking to you, if you start thinking that your family pet is really the Messiah, stop taking the drug. But it's very effective if none of that happens to you. Man. And I watch these commercials and I think, does anybody really listen to the disclaimers? If it's a 60 second spot, 40 seconds are spent with the disclaimer where it tells you not everyone should take X, Y, and Z, because, well, it could cause your ass to fall off. It might cause you to go blind. It could make you deaf, like what happened to the pig man. It could cause you athlete's foot scabies. Your skin could rot. Your hair fall out. Oh, and it might kill you. But if none of that happens, it will relieve your restless leg syndrome.
Before the hour,
Roxanne writes in that Chantix has numerous lawsuits working because of an increase of successful suicides. I can see it now, about a year from now. You ever watch daytime television? I don't mean the soap operas. I just mean having television on during the day. I do occasionally. And the commercials for the law firms that want to know if you took this drug or that drug or exposed to this substance or that substance, especially pharmaceuticals and medical devices. That's a new one. If you had this implanted or that implanted, these joints, this piece of metal, that tube, that whatever, call us because we will help you sue the bastards and get a lot of money. Well, I can see it now. In about a year from now, that's what they're going to be saying about Chantix or Chantix, however the hell they say it, Chantix. Those commercials are just too creepy for me. If you go to some of the websites, the news groups, and look at some of the, which I just did, some of the discussions about Chantix. It's just, Jesus Christ. I mean, smoking's bad for you. Everybody knows that. But is the best way to quit smoking commit suicide? Maybe it is. I don't know. It took me 10 years to stop. I stopped smoking 40 goddamn times until finally, just stopped using Nicorette gum and the patches. That's all. Yeah, I know what it was. It was nicotine. You know, you just take it transdermally or through your mouth or gums or whatever. But I don't care. It worked. It worked. And I never had a suicidal thought at all. I just wanted more gum. Until I finally, finally broke the habit. And like I've said before, I don't know if I've escaped lung cancer or COPD or emphysema. I have no idea. I smoked for a lot of years. And the raspy sound you hear in my voice is just from screaming and talking and, talking for a living. But why would somebody take a drug to stop smoking that it's becoming just horribly apparent that it will make you kill yourself? Oh, I know. The commercials say a very small percentage of people actually off themselves taking our... And who makes that? Pfizer? Yeah, I think it's Pfizer. I wonder what the link is between Pfizer and what is it called? Atria now? Used to be the one of the big tobacco... Philip Morris? Don't they call themselves Atria or something? That's supposed to make you think of an atrium, I guess. Trees, water fountains, statuary, peace and quiet. You know, it's a cemetery. Crazy bastards. Paul is in Jackson, Tennessee. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike, listen. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm Greek, right? Well, my parents are. I was born in New York. But anyway, I listen to a lot of Greek news when I'm home and read a lot of Greek papers. And part of the scam that the party calling itself the new democracy in Greece,
right,
basically the right-wing Republican Party,
right,
of Greece, took Greek lands, turned it over to the churches, and then they used the churches to sell the lands and to the wealthy, who then in turn burned them in order to put strip malls in them.
No,
and
wait.
Lit them on fire.
Wait. We're missing some words. Your transmission's not real good. The neocons in Greece took what? The land?
Yeah, they took land the country's
right.
National parks, whatever. They turned them over to the Greek Christian Church.
Right.
They then convinced the priests to sell them to private investors, who then torched the forest in order to put up strip malls and houses.
Nice, huh?
Yeah, I mean it is incredible. And Greece parallels this country in terms of son and father being president. There's a Greek family called Karamanlis, whose father was the reason we had a military junta takeover in Greece in the late 60s.
Right.
because he started selling off the country, and then he came back to power after the Socialistic Party of Pandero took control from the junta. So it's a long story, but basically they worked their way into power just like they did here in the 80s, and they sold the country out. I mean, period. There's no other way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you called, Paul. I didn't realize, I'm not surprised, but I didn't realize the connection between the Greek neocons and the Orthodox Church. But it's not the least bit surprising. That's for damn sure. Thanks, Paul. You know, there's money in the God business. There is almost as much money in the God business as there is in the oil business, you know? Which is one of the reasons, in my little teeny inchy little microscopic corner of the universe, I wash my hands of the garbage. I just want nothing to do with it. I don't want my children involved in religion. I don't want my grandchildren. I don't want my dog involved in it. Nothing. Screw it. It's a bunch of nonsense. Absolute nonsense. On a good day, on a bad day, it will suck your spirit out and turn it into ashes. Speaking of which, isn't today Ash Wednesday? It sure is. Whew. I wonder if the six members, or is it seven members of the United States Supreme Court who are Catholic, I wonder if they all had their ashes on today. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.